He's an internationally renowned thinker and philosopher in the field of e-learning. He's based at the National Centre for Research at Canadian National Centre for Research and lives in New Brunswick. And there it's 1 a.m. and he's been kind enough to come to agree to the film.
Can you hear the applause, Stephen? He's not very pretty.
And why he's a little bit blurry, once he's still a little bit better, is that he's coming from home, and they have a table over there, and he's a bit dicey. The technology that we're using, if you're interested, is Skype for voice and video, and a program for screen sharing called Join.me. And students use this quite a few times. And he's going to share in a snappy 30 minutes his vision for educators and learning into the future, which I hope will go sit well with all the other inputs we've had today that hopefully are getting you keen and enthusiastic about your own teaching practice.
I'll just show you the people in the audience.
Okay. Oh yeah, I see both of them there.
They're all sitting up the back.
Yeah, of course they're all sitting at the back.
Yeah. And because of the nature of the convention, I'll just hand over to Stephen and mute our end. And
I think you muted before you finished talking. am I on now? I'm going to assume that I'm on now because I'm not hearing any more voices. And, okay. Yeah. All right then. All right, 25 minutes-ish. you get me up at 12:40 in the morning, you get ish. Thank you, everybody, for coming to see me. I really appreciate you coming out or staying even as late in the afternoon as I know you have there. It's being Tasmania, there are many other things that you could be doing, including looking at this wonderful little fountain in the middle of the city of Hobart. So I appreciate you taking the time to come talk to me. This presentation is very much a work in progress, and so the slides are awful. But nonetheless, it does put together a bit of a train of thought that I've been working on over the last little while. And the origins of this train of thought have to do with the question of the role of the teacher in the provision of an education. And I'm not sure how the media has been in Australia, but the media in North America, and especially south of the border, has been going on a lot about how important the teacher is in the provision of an education, in producing good outcomes, in producing employable graduates and all of that. And this leads me to question rather more closely exactly what is meant by that statement, and to interpret that in the light of the Web 2.0 world, the personal learning environment world, the digital world. In recent years, my colleagues and I at the National Research Council have been involved in an emerging set of online learning activities. I've identified four major areas. One of them is the development of online learning software such as Grasshopper, Synergique, or Plurn. These are, scrolling on the mice here. These are things that let me reboot that thought. These are applications intended to support the offering of learning and learning resources online. In addition, we've been involved in offering a series of online courses, courses such as Connectivism, Critical Literacies, Personal Learning Environments, Additionally, my colleagues both at the NRC and across Canada have been theorizing around the idea of connective knowledge, which I won't talk about in detail today, although I've talked about it in great detail elsewhere. Resource sharing, open education, and learning communities. And in my own day-to-day activities, I've done things like write the daily newsletter, I read blogs like crazy. I've been offering conference presentations and having discussions like this, attending conferences online, and ongoing sorts of activities. Each of these has overall contributed one way or another to an overall approach, not only to online learning, but also to learning generally. It's not simply that I've adopted this approach. It's that I and my colleagues have observed this approach in the community generally. It's an approach that emphasizes open learning and learner autonomy. It's an approach that argues that course content is merely a tool employed to stimulate and support learning. A MacGuffin, I've called it in various presentations, rather than the object of learning itself. It's an approach that promotes a pedagogy of learning by engagement and activity within an authentic learning community, a community of practitioners where people practice the discipline rather than merely just talk about it. It's an approach that emphasizes exercises involving those competencies rather than deliberate acts of memorization or rote, an approach that seeks to grow knowledge rather than transfer or construct knowledge through some sort of cognitive process. It's an approach that fosters a wider, often undefined set of competencies associated with a discipline, a recognition that knowing, say, physics isn't just to know the set of facts and theories related to physics, but rather to embody a wider set of beliefs, values, ways of observing, even mannerisms associated with being a physicist. And indeed, it's the caricature of this wider set of competencies that makes a show that we have in Canada and the United States, I don't know if you have it in Australia yet, called The Big Bang Theory, so incredibly funny. If you're not familiar with it, you should look it up. I'm just going to move this to here. Sorry. That might be an improvement. There we go. I hope I'm still centered on the screen. If I'm not, somebody should tell me. Concordant with this approach has been the oft-repeated consensus that the role of the educator will change significantly. Most practitioners are familiar with the admonishment that the educator will no longer be a sage on the stage. But that said, many others resist the characterization of the educator as merely a guide by the side. We continue to expect educators to play an active role in learning. This is something I've certainly learned in offering the courses online. But it's become more and more difficult over time to characterize exactly what that role may be. Sorry, it just bugs me not knowing where my... There I am. Oh yeah, I'm okay. All right. Sorry, just wanted to check. In my own work, I've stated that the role of the teacher is to model and demonstrate. And what I've tried to capture in this is the idea that students need prototypes on which to model their own work. Readers who have learned to program computers by copying, adapting code will know what I mean. But it's also, I suppose, why I see the footprints of Raymond Chandler throughout William Gibson's writing, why I see the echoes of Newton in the writings of Locke, why I see the influence of one person in the work of another. We begin by copying successful practice, and then we begin to modify that practice to satisfy our own particular circumstances and needs. In order for this to happen, the instructor must be more than just a presenter and lecturer. The instructor, in order to demonstrate practice, is required to take a more or less active role in the disciplinary or professional community, demonstrating by this activity successful tactics and techniques within that community, and modeling the approach, language, and worldview of the successful practitioner. If we take this approach, though, it becomes quickly apparent that the role of the educator is expanding. In addition to being expert in the discipline of teaching and pedagogy, the educator is now expected to have mastered some other discipline as well, and not only that, to be an active practitioner in it. Even a teacher of basic disciplines such as science, history, or mathematics must remain grounded, as no discipline has remained stable for very long, and all disciplines require a deeper insight in order to be taught effectively. What are the new subatomic particles? Is Gavin McKenzie's 1424 plausible? How are Fourier transforms used in art? Educators need to know the answers to these questions, even though the answers to these questions are the subject of current debate and emerging theory. Moreover, the concept of the learning environment and learner support have also begun to expand. Well before the computer age, teachers and professors began to be expected to use coffee machines, the horror, slides and overhead projectors, intercom systems. Today's school includes smart boards and computer labs, the internet and mobile phones, online encyclopedias and social network sites. While some educational systems respond by blocking these new technologies, for better or worse, education is moving into the digital arena, and learning support involves understanding and applying at least some of these. And indeed, it becomes apparent that in such an environment, the continued focus on the role of the educator or teacher is misplaced. Attaching more and more capacity and responsibility to a single individual or role is misplaced. Even in traditional education, we have begun to see some specialization. From the early days, schools had librarians, custodial workers, guidance counselors, and administrators. Today, we've seen the rise of instructional technology and communication media specialists. In my 1998 paper, The Future of Online Learning, I proposed the role of the educator itself would become unbundled. Thinking mostly of the concept of distance learning, I described a concept current at the time, and I think it's still current, where student and instructor were located at a distance from each other, and a third person, a coach or a facilitator, was co-located with the student to act as a mentor and advocate. I had seen this model work well in northern Alberta, places like the Sunshine Project in Slave Lake, and in places where it wasn't used, I saw the distance learning paradigm worked much less effectively. As each part of the teaching task becomes more complex, and as we as educators seek to reach more specialized populations in more difficult circumstances, the need to understand and where necessary unbundle the varied role of the educator becomes more pressing. A narrow focus on the idea of the teacher as the purveyor of an education is unhelpful and misleading. In a recent article in The Telegraph, for example, we are told free online lectures will destroy universities unless they get their act together. A quote from them, the Khan Academy, it notes, offers over 1,600 undergraduate-level videos on maths, science, humanities, which have collectively been watched by over 30 million times, end quote. These raise the question of why students should pay thousands merely to sit anonymously in a lecture theater. Freely available online lectures and textbooks, says the article, give universities the opportunity to reduce costs and increase quality while focusing resources on what really matters, contact time between teachers and students. If we look at the world of educational videos, however, we find that far from disappearing from the radar screen, the academic lecture has become a new form of online content of some importance to educators. The TED videos highlight talks by educators in a variety of fields. Universities are using lecture capture software to produce sets of videos covering entire courses. A visit to free video lectures, for example, will lead the viewer to Berkeley professor John Jacob Campbell's lectures on the nature of mind, or John Kilstrom's course on social cognition, to name just two of dozens. This is merely the tip of the iceberg. The rise of internet learning has led to a proliferation of lectures supported by and sponsored by academic institutions, and not an end to them. And the presentation of learning online can become more complex, more subtle, and interesting. at the online global education conference a few weeks ago, for example, I watched and listened as Allison Dennis described Roots and Shoots, an educational program offered by the Jane Goodall Institute. And if I had really good slides, I'd have a screenshot from that, but I don't have really good slides. I'm sorry. The purpose of Roots and Shoots is to encourage young people to learn authentic real-world skills through participation in a campaign related to an environment or an ecology. Such programs, says Danes, lead to more motivated students and better educational outcomes. The students are more likely to report positive feelings about education and perform better on tests. They learn basic concepts such as science, history, and mathematics by application in the course of those projects. And teachers are more able to leverage their work to support these traditional subjects. There's no end to such projects online. There really is no end to such projects online. I've tried to find the end. There is no end. Another lecturer at the Global Education Conference talked about Polar Bears International, where a group of scientists based in Churchill, Manitoba, work and talk with students worldwide about wildlife in the Arctic and the effects of climate change. Another described the Sindrioff Art Museum, an educational program for seniors. Another described the Fulbright Narratives from Turkmenistan. Another, the Lit World Girls Clubs. The list goes on and on and on. Students can choose from almost any discipline, any topic, and even any pedagogy under the sun. What's significant about these examples is not so much the new opportunities they offer students, though there is that. It's that all of them redefine the educator's roles in some significant way. They create entirely new categories of educator, such as online lecturer or scientist studying polar bears. Entire disciplines far removed from traditional instructional design are being created and populated by people who direct online videos, design learning communities, program massive games like the World Bank's Evoke. And they create new categories of roles and responsibilities for in-person educators. What is, after all, the role of a teacher helping Roots and Shoots activists? What skills does a teacher bring to the table when facilitating conversations with students in Turkmenistan? A couple of weeks ago, I went through an exercise with one of Alec Koros's graduate education classes. I threw out the idea of multiple roles in education to Twitter readers and gathered a set of them. I then took this set and went through it with the class online. As I talked about the roles, the students defined them, added examples, identified who would perform the task described, and the result was a unique and colorful slideshow exploring the evolving education profession. It's worth, I think, actually taking the time to list these roles. Now, these slides aren't quite so colorful, but nonetheless, they do list the roles. First role is the learner, someone who models the act of learning. The educator helps students with this most fundamental of tasks. This includes getting excited about something new, exploring it, trying it out, engaging it, experimenting with it, talking to others, learning about it. Everyone learns, from novices to professionals, and while our approach to learning may change over time as we become more skilled and more professional, we always have something to teach about learning. That's my clock. I suppose everybody's heard my clock by now. Another role, the collector. Educators have always been collectors, from the days when they would bring stacks of old magazines into class to the modern era when they share links, resources, new faces, and new names. They find materials related to their own interests, keep in tune with student interests. They are the maven, the architect, the maven, the librarian, the journalist, the archivist. The next role is the curator. As opposed to the collector who goes out and finds, the curator is one who organizes and makes sense of what has been found. The curator is like a caretaker and a preserver, but also a creator of meaning, a guardian of knowledge, or an expert knower. A curator is a connoisseur, one who brings quality to the fore, one who sequences and presents. A curator may be a presenter, an instructional designer, or an artist. The alchemist. Historically, of course, the alchemist was one who transmuted lead into gold. Today's Alchemist mixes the ordinary and mundane into something new and unexpected. The Alchemist practices the mix of remix, the mash of mashup, the collage of bricolage. The Alchemist sees patterns and symmetries in distinct materials and brings them out and brings them together to bring that out. The person who created Obama Girl and the artist who created the Good Good Night lip dub at the University of Quebec in Montreal were alchemists. If you're not familiar with those, you should look them up. They are pretty good. The programmer builds sequences into machines, manipulates symbols to produce meaning, calculates, orders, assembles, and manages. A good part of the programmer's task involves working directly on computers, as I have, as is the case for those writing software, designing communities or social networks, or setting up wikis. Another part of the task is conceptual, applying to people who develop course materials or creating workflows. Authors are part programmers, as are instructional designers, and as are processed analysts. The salesperson is often thought of as a big talker who will not do the project, but such a person nonetheless plays an important role in providing information, supporting belief, and motivating action. The salesperson, like all educators, is the champion of a cause or an idea. It is the principal selling to the staff, the teacher promoting a set of values to the student, the scientist informing the entrepreneur, the expert counseling the politician. All of these are sales in one form or another. All of these are forms of education in one form or another. The convener. This is the person who brings people together. Every good office has one. It's the person who wanders from desk to desk signing people up for softball or suds. A convener is a network builder, a community organizer, or as one course participant wrote, a huge part of life in rural Saskatchewan, and I would bet in rural Australia as well. Conveners are leaders, coaches, administrators. They are collaboration builders, coalition builders, enablers, or sometimes even just Pied Pipers. The coordinator. This person organizes the people who have been brought together, organizing groups or things together for a common good. A coordinator is an eminently practical person, organizing schedules, setting expectations, managing logistics, following up and solving problems. The people who are expert at coordination know who they are. They are the ones who wind up coordinating everything for people, weddings, parties, fishing trips, field trips. A coordinator is a connector and an integrator, but most of all, a systems person. The designer. In online learning, we tend to think specifically of the instructional designer, but in fact we see the hand of the designer on everything from wall maps to book pages to desks and chairs to classroom paint. The purpose of the designer is to create spaces for learning, whether they are in person, on paper, or online. They attend to flow, perspectives, light, tone, and shading. The designer may be the industrial architect creating a new school or the software architect creating a new simulation. The coach. This multifaceted role involves everything from creating synergy and chemistry in a group to providing the game plan for learning to raising the bar and encouraging players to higher performance. Sorry about the metaphors there. Though the coach is on the side of the learner, in the learner's corner, urging them on and giving advice, the coach also serves a larger or higher objective, often working to achieve team or organizational goals. The agitator, that's me. This is the person who creates the itch a person's education will eventually scratch. Sorry about that, it sounded good when I wrote it. The role of the agitator is to create the seed of doubt, the sense of wonder, the feeling of urgency, the cry of outrage. The agitator is sometimes the devil's advocate, sometimes the revolutionary, sometimes the disruptive agent, and sometimes just somebody who is thinking outside the box. We can all be agitators, but scientists, skeptics, journalists, and activists have elevated it into a discipline of its own. The facilitator. Such a person makes the learning space comfortable. Their role is to move the process or conversation forward, but within a broad range of parameters that will stress clarity, order, inclusiveness, and good judgment. The facilitator keeps things on track and, within reason, gently nudges things forward, but without typically imposing his or her opinions or agenda onto the outcome. Moderators, arbitrators, and mediators are all types of facilitator. So is the chair of a debate or the leader of a classroom discussion. Tech support. Sometimes tech support people seem like magicians. Other times they seem like power brokers, but their influence on the educational processes and outcomes is unquestioned. Today they are an indispensable part of the organization. Yes? Oh, okay. Let me skip ahead then, and I'll let you view these roles. Oh, there's many more. I could have gone on for a long time, but I won't do that. This is what happened in Alex Koros's class, too. So, but let me have a couple of paragraphs just to wrap up here and answer the question that you've asked, because I think it's an important question. There's 23 roles altogether, and no doubt a relatively reflective leader could begin to identify more roles. And any of these roles could be decomposed into an even more finely grained set of roles. But it should be evident, I think, that the role of the educator, even if narrowly conceived, is actually a set of very different yet equally important tasks. And that's the reason why it's frustrating when people identify the role of the learner as the central factor influencing the success or failure of a student's education. Such a statement begs us to question what aspect of the role is so vitally important. And the likely answer is that they all are, or that it depends on the individual student. And it seems clear to me that continuing to treat them as a single role to be performed by a single person increasingly defies the reality that is today's educational system. We've worked on increasingly advanced forms of online learning over the years, and one of the things I've been observing over this time is that educators have been gravitating individually toward one or another of these roles. Some of them take on the role of lecturer or demonstrator, others become programmers or bureaucrats. You could probably look around the room, those of you who are left in it, and pick out who's the bureaucrat, who's the designer, who's the convener, and so on. Another thing I've observed is not every student wants or needs the services of every role. Some people want or need more coaching, others want or need more mentoring, others need more design, others are just happy to have the reassurance of a convener or a coordinator, others just to argue with a critic. It can be argued, and maybe the case even, that there's no such thing as learning styles, but empirically, it's just observationally true that what students want and need is as varied as a forest. I think that as I offer more types and more instances of learning, I find that we can achieve much more efficient, effective, and rewarding learning by organizing the educational system according to the sorts of educational services people might want and need, rather than predefined collections of students assigned almost randomly to an individual teacher. Rather than asking one person to perform every role, some of them very badly, for a given group of students, it makes more sense to ensure that these services are available where needed and to allocate them according to the needs of the students, the nature of the learning environment, and the type of learning being undertaken. Historically, it's been impractical to break up the roles of the teachers because you need a certain scale even to have a separate librarian or an AV coordinator, and a much bigger scale to have separate people assigned as lecturers, coaches, etc. But relatively few of these roles need to be performed in person, and most of them scale online pretty well, which means with new information and communications technologies, we can think about and rethink about how we've organized labor and education. And this is, in fact, what is happening online, at least outside the circles of formal learning. People are finding coaching where they need it, community where they want it, and lecture and demonstration for those days when they have the time. And maybe when we think of education as organized this way, perhaps we can talk more intelligently, with rather more rationality, about the role of teaching with regard to learning outcomes. Instead of focusing on teaching as an undifferentiated whole, perhaps we can look at the specific needs of students, identifying where the provision of more appropriately focused services would offer the needed support, rather than blaming some individual for not maximally mapping their activities to the varied and changing needs of some dozens of students. This is not a proposal for a re-engineering of the educational system. I don't want to say if we provided this service and that site and those mentor exchanges that we would improve the educational system. It's not intended to be a recipe, but I do want to say that we need to begin thinking and talking about the system this way, gradually adding those components, probably externally to the educational system. Eventually, learning will be transformed this way, the work of teachers will be transformed this way, and the needs of students and the affordances of technology make it inevitable. What we want to do at this juncture is to accommodate such a transition in such a way as to maximize the impact of public support while maintaining a stability and consistency in the system as a whole. Sorry, I went a little over time. It went faster before, but that's basically what I had to say, and I hope that it was a bit of an experiment and presentation for me, so I hope it kind of worked. I'm sure people will tell me if it didn't. Well, they're almost all still there. Yep. I have coins. Oh, right, I've moved that over here. Let me bring this back up here. There we go. I have coins. 2 coins. So, all right. Are y'all ready? Oh, they're European. I don't know which is which. Okay. Well, it still came out either way. It came out a head and a tail. One of each. Okay, you need 2 coins again? 2 coins again. Okay, the side with the big one on it is a head, I've decided. And head and a tail. Once again, what are the odds? We need it again. One more. And 2 tails. Okay, well, that was a first. Yeah, it's getting on, so Chris, please don't be offended if I take off, but I'm going to take off now. So, bye everyone, it's really nice to see you.